Welcome to Everything Scary. My name is Lynn, and I'm here with my co-host, local celebrity. sorry, international celebrity.
Thank you.
Matt McLean.
Hello.
Every Tuesday, we release a new episode, mostly true crime, but we've also been known to cover a pandemic, a haunting, a super mad, super strong chimpanzee. We'll cover anything and everything scary. Please rate us 5 stars and join us on Instagram at Everything Scary Pod. Here we go. All righty. How's it going again?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm really nervous.
Why are you nervous?
Because I'm going to talk to you about wrestling.
Oh, and this is my modus operandi?
Yeah, it's like your thing. And I want to do you proud.
Well, I will say this. I don't know a ton of the details of this case.
Because you're not a lunatic, right?
Yeah, stayed away from them.
Well, I'm going to throw it right in your face now.
Also kind of within the wrestling community, which I am a member of, he is kind of a persona non grata.
Right.
Not mentioned.
They
don't discuss
him. Erase him.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it made researching a little bit hard because some forms did actually erase him. And it was just, it's really, really bizarre because he was a huge name.
And an incredibly talented professional, like just as his wrestling ability alone, again, not him as a person.
Right.
But one of the best.
Right.
And you know, now, obviously, what he did was not okay.
And I'm going to touch on it, of course. I don't want to upset anyone and say, like, oh, I love Chris Benoit. I don't. He had such extensive brain injuries.
That yes.
It's hard. I mean, you know, you have to blame the person because who else can you blame? But, you know, if he went through his entire life and didn't do anything, and then after death, they took apart his brain, they would be like, oh, my God.
Yes.
Like, the guy was not running on all eight.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, may not be fit. My understanding, to commit a crime, you need two things, the guilty mind and the guilty act. And if your brain is mush, you've only got...
Okay, I'm going to get into it.
Yeah, let's just get right into it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The wagon before the horse.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay, so let's do this here.
Okay.
I'm hoping that you can find something fun in the story because it's truly a heartbreaking case.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to put this out there. I try my best in every single case to be accurate with my information. And I know that you're a wrestling fan, so I tried to send you some of my chicken.
Yes, you did.
My handwritten notes. And I got back a message that said, that's all amazing. And I was like, yes, good for me. I did it. I hit the nail on the head. And I was like, it's right. And you're like, no, not at all.
No, but it's so good.
So I'm going to just tell it as the Picasso painting I saw it.
Okay.
And you just feel free to jump in wherever
all
you want.
Right.
Because I promise I'm not going to be upset if you correct my wrestling.
Okay.
I don't, base my pride off of my wrestling.
Yeah. Knowledge. Okay.
So I will say right out of the gate that this does involve the death of a child.
Yes. Yes, it does.
My sources for this case are mainly an amazing document. No, you said you didn't know much about this case, but it's called The Dark Side of the Ring, Chris Benoit. ABCnews.go.com, wrestling headlines, of which I frequent. Sportskeeda.com, Wikipedia, TalkSports, and WrestlingInc.com.
Oh, Wrestling Inc. is very good. They are terrific.
You don't need to tell me twice.
And Dark Side of the Ring is a phenomenal show, but that's the one episode I skipped.
No, I can't imagine.
Yep.
So this is the case of professional wrestler Chris Benoit. I'm going to start off on Monday, June 25th, 2007. We're in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
This is what some refer to as Monday Night Raw.
Yes.
And that is WWE. Like, do you know why they're the WWE now?
I do, yes.
This is the wildlife. Like.
Yeah, there was two WWFs.
No, the something wildlife.
The Federation. World Wildlife Fund.
Yes. But like.
Funder Foundation, I forget.
Why did they have to? They're going on to the WWF and they're like, wait a second, this is just guys fighting. I was going to see a bear.
Like you go to the WWF, like walking up the CN Tower stairs. Where's Hulk Hogan? I think it was copyright. I think it was brand confusion. And I think because, I don't know why the World Wildlife Fund kind of won that. Maybe Vince wanted to just branch out and rebrand anyways.
I don't know. I've always known it truthfully until I started. And then I saw it was WWF before. And I'm like, yeah, that's how I remember it. Because I did go to, when it was the Sky Dome, I went and I saw... The only one I remember is The Undertaker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I was really young, like 12 years old or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't get it then, and I don't get it now.
Me neither.
So the scene opens up to Vince McMahon standing alone in the wrestling ring. The stadium is empty. The lights are low and McMahon starts to speak. He says, "Good evening. Tonight, this arena here in Corpus Christi, Texas, was to have been filled to capacity with enthusiastic WWF fans. Tonight's story was supposed to be the alleged demise of my character, Mr. McMahon."
Oh, that's right. I forgot what happened to him a week before or 2 weeks before.
Yeah.
That's right.
So he says, however, in reality, WWE superstar Chris Benoit, his wife Nancy, and their son Daniel are dead, which is just the most hard, like that line is just so hard.
Not gone or passed or nothing. No longer with us. I mean, just the hard.
It's Vince McMahon. So I guess he's, but it was, well, he says their bodies were discovered this afternoon in their new suburban Atlanta home. The authorities are undergoing an investigation. We here in the WWE can only offer our condolences to the extended family of Chris Benoit. And the only other thing we can do in this moment is pay tribute to Chris Benoit.
Oh, you know, hindsight is 2020, and this is fucking gross.
Yeah. We will offer you some of the most memorable moments in Chris's professional life, and you'll hear comments from his peers, those here, his fellow performers, those here who loved Chris and admired him so much. So tonight will be a 3-hour tribute to one of the greatest WWE superstars of all time. Tonight will be a tribute to Chris Benoit. And the hours that followed paid a great tribute to someone who at the time was very highly regarded.
Mm-hmm.
We would hear from John Cena, who said, "Chris is the guy that you want to go to war with." Stone Cold Steve Austin would just simply say, "I love you, Chris." Mm-hmm. William Regal would say somewhat ominously, "I'd be quite happy to sit here and tell you all the things about Chris Benoit that I'd like to tell you. But now all I'm willing to say is that Chris Benoit was undoubtedly the hardest working man in professional wrestling, the most dedicated and totally absorbed in the business of professional wrestling of anyone I've ever met. And that's really all I've got to say in the moment."
Just kept it about in the ring.
Yes. It almost sounded cold and as if William Regal knew more than the rest of Chris's peers did. And I did get to the bottom of why he said this, and I will circle back to what he had to say.
Okay.
But before we get into that fatal night, let's get a bit of backstory and so that we can know the main people in the story. I'm going to struggle my way through the wrestling talk, so you feel free at any point to jump in.
I will.
Christopher Michael Benoit was born May 21st of 1967. He was born in Montreal, Quebec, but grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. Chris started off his wrestling career in Stampede Wrestling, which was a professional wrestling promotion outside of Calgary, Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
Chris started with them in 1985, and he was known as the Canadian Crippler. In 1989, he was with the New Japan Pro Wrestling, where he pushed his body to the limits and would have matches with younger wrestlers to improve his skills. In August of 1990, Chris won his first major championship, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I didn't know he won that.
Well, I'm here to
inform you. I knew he was big in Japan. I never knew he won the strap.
The IWGP?
Yeah. Yes.
He would join the World Champion Wrestling, or us in the know call it the WCW, in June of 1992 during IC Woman Crush Wednesday.
WCW, Woman Crush. Yeah, when people say WCW, I'm like, all right, who are we talking about? Like, she didn't wrestle. That's Gal Gadot.
During his time with the WCW, he was going back to Japan to compete in matches there. He actually continued to go back and forth to Japan until 1999. In 1994, in between tours with Japan, he was working with Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
It should be noted that November of 1994, Chris accidentally backdropped a wrestler by the name of Sabu from a high angle, which resulted in the wrestler having his neck broken.
Mm-hmm.
Although Sabu would recover and later would return to the ring, but Chris said that he was said to be so distraught over the incident that he broke down in the back and he was horrified that he had nearly paralyzed somebody.
Well, I know a lot of, especially coming out of Alberta, like mm-hmm. the Bret Hart, like the Dungeon, like Benoit, those guys, they pride themselves on having matches that look like you're going to be, you know, just dummied at the end of it, but really having no more injuries than an average football player would have after a game. So, it's no surprising he would be devastated after that. Did you see the clip of the Sabu drop?
Yes.
It's pretty rough.
Yeah, it is really rough. I actually watched an interview with Sabu regarding the injury, and he said that although he did not blame Chris for the broken neck, he simply didn't like him.
Oh, that's great, though. That he's
he's like, no, it's not
the neck thing, it's him as a human being. He said that they competed in Japan and he just found Chris to be a very negative and unfriendly person.
Hmm.
As devastated as he was at the thought of truly harming somebody, though, Chris's signature move was the flying headbutt.
Yeah.
Which seemed pretty self-explanatory.
Yep.
He would climb to the top ropes and would jump down with his legs spread and would make head-to-head contact.
Mm-hmm.
I will not ever understand a headbutt because I would think that the buddy would get hurt just as much as the butter.
Yeah, ideally you're using your forehead on somebody else's softer part, but
I wouldn't be able to apply it properly then because I just thought we're smashing heads.
You're like a sheep or like a ram. You're like a billy goat. You're like, all right, let's do it. No.
Now I know, I think I'll start using it properly.
Yeah, come down on the bridge of their nose next time.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Anyways, in 1995, well, in the WCW, Chris was asked by Ric Flair to become a member of the new reformed group called the Four Horsemen. This group consisted of Arn Anderson, Brian Pillman, Ric Flair, and now Chris.
Wow.
Did you know that?
I did not know that Brian Pillman was in there with Benoit.
He leaves.
Okay.
I'll tell you why.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so exciting that you know this. Their storyline was basically to be in a squabble. that's where they is, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Squabbling with the big guys like Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. Sting, which I thought was the singer of the Police. I'm wrong. Lex Luger and Kevin Sullivan.
Ooh.
Kevin had an ongoing scripted war with Brian Pillman, one of the Four Horsemen. And when Brian left the WCW for the WWF, now WWE, in June of 1996, it was encouraged that Chris keep up the feud with Kevin Sullivan. The storyline that Kevin himself thought up was for there to be sexual tension between Kevin's wife, Nancy, who went by the name Woman, which I hate, and Chris. I hate it.
Yeah, it is a weird.
Kevin and Nancy had been married in real life since September of 1992. So let's go back. I just want to quickly touch on Nancy. She was born Nancy Elizabeth Toffoloni on May 17th, 1964. After she graduated high school in 1981, she went on to answer phones at State Farm as well as did some modeling.
Hmm.
Nancy had married her first husband, who was also her high school sweetheart, and his name was Jim Doss. In 1984, Nancy sold programs for matches in Orlando, Florida, usually alongside of her husband, Jim. It was there that she was approached to be on the cover of Wrestling All-Stars magazine. And while shooting for the magazine, she met Kevin Sullivan. And the two hit it off. Kevin wanted Nancy to be a part of his wrestling entourage, and she did. And at that time, she was known as the Fallen Angel. And she would be part of Kevin's satanic entourage.
Oh, yeah.
Later on, in 1984, Nancy would file for divorce from her husband, Jim, and would marry Kevin the next year in 1985. Nancy would make her debut in the WCW acting as Robin, who was a nerdy-looking pretty girl who sat ringside, and her storyline was that she was obsessed with a wrestler by the name of Rick Steiner. But after an attack on Steiner's brother, Scott, Nancy admitted that she's not Robin Green, but she, in fact, is Woman, and she stands behind no man.
No way. What a reveal.
My name is not Robin Green, and I'm definitely not from Milwaukee. 90 minutes of the Beef, Wally, and Super Supreme, surely you jest. I am Woman. I am not a valet. I am not a manager. What I will be is a woman who will take control and conquer the wrestling world. Not since Cleopatra has there been a woman such to conquer the world. I will rule the wrestling world. There's an old saying, behind every successful man, there stands a woman. This woman stands behind no man. The reason why I chose the Steiners first was because Rick had no weaknesses in the ring whatsoever. But his heart was another matter, which I showed you, didn't I? The men I chose to beat you to a pulp, Scott, were devious, sinister, and most of all, they were bad boys. And I really like bad boys. So I'll tell you again, I am Woman. Whatever it takes, whatever I have to do, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rule and I'm going to conquer this wrestling world.
But still, she would be known as Kevin Sullivan's wife on and off screen. In 1993, Kevin and Nancy joined the ECW, which is the Eastern Champion Wrestling. Championship Wrestling?
What year?
1993.
Would it be Eastern or Extreme yet?
Maybe Extreme.
It could be Extreme. I don't know when they went from Eastern to Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Okay. ECW.
Just say ECW.
I'm trying to flex my knowledge. But in 1994, Kevin would leave the ECW and would rejoin the WCW, leaving Woman to manage the Sandman.
Okay.
This is a lot.
Woman, the Sandman. Yeah. You got it.
Now, because at this point, Sandman was separated from his wife, Peaches, because he accidentally hit her when he was temporarily blind.
Mm.
And who amongst us hasn't had that smell, right? But Woman and Peaches are now enemies. And in one clip that I watched, Peaches whips her husband with a leather strap while two other wrestlers held him down. And then after he was let loose, he grabbed Peaches by her hair.
Oh, boy.
And then she was saved by one of the other guys. But as she was trying to go backstage, Woman popped out from the stands and dragged her by her hair back to the ring and over to Sandman. And then Sandman lifts up her dress. They blurred it out, but yeah. Lifted up her dress and Woman starts whipping her with a leather whip. It was pure chaos.
Yeah, that's ECW.
I felt like I was having a fever dream.
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
is
right.
This real life? A bunch of other drama happened during her time with the ECW, but I'll save you from me trying to explain it to you.
And just if you can just say ECW.
ECW.
The ECW? Rookie. Oh,
so like,
very rookie.
Like doing pot.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, they wrote it in here, the ECW. God, I'm such a loser. Okay. So honestly, this felt like trying to piece together 40 years of soap operas. If the soap opera actors constantly change their names and locations. And soap operas.
Yes, that's correct.
So now we're back to the scripted budding romance between a woman and Chris Benoit.
Okay.
Much to the chagrin of Kevin Sullivan, even though it was his idea. In January of 1996, Woman announced that she would be rejoining the WCW. Her role here would be to stand ringside and cheer on Macho Man Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan until one fateful night in February of 1996. Macho Man and Chris Benoit were matched, and clearly, Nancy is the type of gal who likes men whose neck muscles touch their earlobes.
They did. He
and
had huge
Chris
traps.
Had neck for days.
He did.
And just like that, she turned on Randy and joined in with the Four Horsemen.
Wow. Just like that.
Yep. Also, in researching this, I found that Miss Elizabeth was part of that group, and that she was said to be responsible for cleaning the stables of the Four Horsemen. Which to me sounds like she's cleaning their bathroom.
That's hilarious. That is hilarious. Did they say that? Yep. In the
cleaning their stables.
Oh my God.
Sounds like she's got a shovel.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, Kevin Sullivan was known to be feuding with one of the horsemen, Brian Pillman. But when Brian left to join the WWE in June of 1996, it left Sullivan without a nemesis. So he encouraged Woman to flirt with Chris. And bada bing, bada boom, you got yourself a rivalry.
Just like that.
Yep. And Nancy and Chris began their on-screen flirting. And unfortunately for Kevin Sullivan, these two were great method actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they refused to break character even after the cameras stopped rolling.
Oh.
And just a little aside, I watched a part from a pay-per-view event where Kevin Sullivan comes back to get revenge.
Uh-oh.
Yep, on Benoit. When Chris walked out, they instantly started repeatedly punching each other in the head. Even if they're trained to only absorb a small amount of that, his head was just, it was going like
yeah,
this. Like
back and forth, whiplash.
That cannot be good on your brain. It gave me a headache just to watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, really.
But anyways, it was widely believed that off screen, Kevin was physically abusive towards Nancy. In July of 1996, in Daytona Beach, Florida, Kevin, who they only called the Taskmaster,
mm-hmm.
Such a lame name.
I know, like a scheduler. Isn't that what a task?
To me, it just it, like there's such a spectrum of tasks. Like taking out like the garbage is a task. Like,
well, then that would make me a taskmaster this week.
Like, yeah. You're a taskmaster. Good for you. So I said it's a stupid nickname, but he and Chris were scheduled to fight at an event called Bash at the Beach.
Oh yeah.
And it was here that the pair began exchanging real hits and resulted in Chris punching the side of Kevin's head and breaking and permanently damaging his eardrum.
Wow.
The pair continued to fight once they were backstage, and Nancy's sister Sandy was in the back, and she described the two men both calling her to come with them as if she was a puppy. She was then handed the phone, and Nancy was on the other end, and she told Sandra to leave and go with Chris, not to go near her husband. It is assumed that Chris was aware of Kevin's physically assaulting Nancy, and that's what led to the physical real fight that night.
Wow.
Nancy told her sister later that night that Kevin was physically abusive and that she planned to divorce him. But regardless, the show must go on. Kevin would continue to encourage Nancy and Chris to pretend that they were getting close, leaving the two men seemingly at odds. And on December 7th in 1996, we were lucky enough to see a home video of Chris and Nancy huddling and drinking wine, and Chris basically rejoicing in the fact that Nancy was now his woman, even saying, "You consider yourself a master of human chess. Well, my bishop just took your queen."
Hey, Kevin. Obviously, I'm not at my mother's. And obviously, I'm not in the Keys. I'm definitely not in the Bahamas, honey. And I know you can't find me. I told you that when I was planning on leaving, you couldn't find me. I meant it. You can't find me. I really meant it in Baltimore when I said that if you kicked him one more time, I meant it was over. I meant it. You don't hurt somebody this way and get away with it. This is not 1950. This is 1996. You know, women have rights. We can vote. You know, you get that cute little comment you tell the boys all the time in the bar, but it's not funny. And I don't like it. This is 1996. I do what I want, when I want. I have nothing to do with the NWO, do I, Chris?
Sullivan, talk about us making the same mistakes. I don't think I've made any mistake. Talk about kicking some sense into me. To be talking like that, you obviously need a little sense kicked into yourself.
Waiter.
You talk about being the best chess player at this game. Well, Sullivan, my bishop takes your queen. Checkmate.
That is a good burn for Taskmaster.
So this led to a stunned looking Sullivan in the ring. And then he had to be guided off because he was just so devastated.
Yeah.
A fellow wrestler, Dean Malenko, you know the guy, right?
Oh, yeah. One of Benoit's bros.
Yep. Asked his wife, Julie, who worked at the therapist's office, to arrange an appointment for Nancy. It was unclear what had transpired to make Dean believe that Nancy needed to speak with somebody. But regardless, Julie did as she was asked and got Nancy in to see the therapist. When she arrived, she was with Chris and was wearing dark sunglasses. She sat down and removed the sunglasses to reveal a very black eye. Mm. That Kevin had allegedly given her. Her injuries and a statement were noted by the therapist, but that was seemingly all that was done. And for the record, Kevin Sullivan has denied any of these allegations.
Wow.
But as the joke went, Kevin had scripted his own divorce because Nancy and Chris were now involved in a real full-blown affair.
So in wrestling, they're supposed to have a fake affair and then...
And in real life, they're having a real life affair. Yeah. Chris was also married to a woman named Martina. They had married in 1988 and had two children together, a son named David and a daughter named Megan. When word of the affair got around, Chris and Martina also divorced. So both Nancy and Chris divorced their spouses in 1997.
Hmm.
After both of their divorces were finalized, Chris and Nancy got engaged but did not marry right away. In January of 2000, Benoit would leave the WCW and would move over to the WWF. Now WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy would stay home in Atlanta and manage Chris's career and hopefully raise a family. And just as luck would have it, on February 25th of 2000, Nancy would give birth to the couple's first and only child, Daniel Christopher Benoit. And they would marry on November 23rd of 2000. Chris's career was at an all-time high during these times. He was said to be very highly respected in the business and one of the greats.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Everything Scary podcast listeners. Do you need a break from the darkness of true crime?
No, us neither. We're actually addicted.
But if you need a distraction to get your mind off the scary so you can sleep tonight,
then check out the More Life Diaries podcast with us. I'm Mark.
And I'm Kat.
We're parents that sold everything to pursue our dreams of moving to Mexico and starting over.
Join us as we talk about mindset, motivation, travel and life abroad, and the ups and downs of starting over.
Check out episode 6, the New Year special, to see how far we've come and where we plan on going.
Our podcast is available on Apple, Spotify at More Life Diaries Podcast, and YouTube at More Life Diaries. We hope you listen and subscribe to follow us on our journey.
Now back to true crime.
Okay. Also in 2000, Chris would reconnect with his old friend, Eddie Guerrero. The pair had first met in Japan, and both men were debuted to come to the WWF along with another friend slash pro wrestler, Chris Jericho, on January 31st of 2000. At first, the pair didn't like each other. At least that's what their on-screen characters were. But behind the scene, these two were as thick as thieves. And it didn't hurt that Nancy and Eddie's wife, Vicky, got along very well as well. After a while, the two truly considered each other to be brothers.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. On screen, off screen, everybody, like, even casual wrestling fans knew these guys were besties.
Yeah. To say they were besties would be the understatement of the century. It is said that Chris was never religious, but Eddie would start talking to him about the Bible, and Chris was so intrigued and really paid full attention and started appreciating religion himself. Now, as the couples, as Nancy and Chris's little son Daniel was getting older, it was easy to see that he had some developmental delays. He wasn't meeting his milestones. He had social issues. I'm absolutely not a doctor. I'm sorry if I misled you in thinking that. But in researching it, it was not easy to find a lot about Daniel because the couple are said to have kept it very close to the chest. But what I did see, there was a lot of problematic words that they used back in those days describing his differences. I won't be repeating those, but it does seem like he may have been somewhere on the autism spectrum.
What does not meeting milestones
like
mean?
Walking, talking.
Oh, like by a certain number of months, you should be Googling or whatever it is.
Okay. Eye contact, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. And then he was just, I got you.
This was causing a lot of problems with Nancy and Chris. People close to them would say that they fought often about how to parent Daniel, but no one would ever say that Daniel wasn't loved. Mm. They both doted on him. And by all accounts, aside from a couple delays, Daniel seemed to be a super happy, fun kid. Mm-hmm. People would describe him as the happiest boy around.
Oh,
they hadn't met you yet.
Thank you.
He was a perfect mix of both of his parents. He loved school and he had a ton of friends despite his social issues. And he was said to be a kind, smart, empathetic boy.
Oh.
Jim Ross, who is a WWE Hall of Famer, would say about Daniel that he had a great deal of energy and that he was a fun kid. Daniel absolutely loved animals. His parents bought him 2 German Shepherd dogs and he loved them and the feeling was mutual. His neighbors owned horses and allowed Daniel to go over often and ride them.
Oh, nice.
And of course, Daniel loved wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would often be seen with his mom ringside at events and he was always dressed to the nines. He was always wearing like a little 3-piece suit.
Oh, really? I thought you were saying like a Benoit t-shirt adorable.
But he did have like all the Benoit dolls and like their walls were lined with pictures. Yeah. And his older brother, David, from the other marriage, videos of these two together just, oh God, it is so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
There's one picture, one of the people in the interviews was like, this is the best picture of the two of them. And it's just David walking and then Daniel's like grabbed the back of his shirt and he's holding on.
Yeah.
So precious.
It's cute.
All that to say, Daniel may have been struggling somewhat, but this is what was beginning to show cracks in the couple's relationship was this topic. In 2003, Nancy actually filed for a divorce from Chris as well as got a restraining order.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But would later drop both and the couple would continue to try to make it work as a family. Mm. And back to Chris's BFF, Eddie. Eddie was going through a bit of a rough time himself. As it goes with a lot of these professional athletes, Eddie was struggling with some pretty serious substance addictions.
A lot of them.
Yes. I will, of course, touch on why it is more likely to happen in athletes who compete in high-impact sports. But according to Eddie's wife, Vicky, Eddie had actually OD'd 3 times in their home. Twice she called 911 and had her husband tended to, But the last time she was so fed up with him returning home only to go through the exact same motions and re-traumatize her and the children, as he was ODing, she stepped over him with the kids and left him there without calling for help.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. That's, Jesus. Yeah. That's a tough situation.
Right. Like, you have to be.
Just at your wit's end.
Yeah.
You would have to be.
Chris was often the one getting Eddie into bed and positioning him so that he wouldn't asphyxiate when he vomits in his sleep. One day, Eddie showed up to work under the influence and the WWE had to let him go. I don't know a lot about wrestling, but I would imagine you have to be pretty on your toes to prevent getting seriously hurt. So Eddie was fired, but he went to rehab. And after he was clean and sober, they were all too happy to have him back. At WrestleMania 20 in New York, Eddie won his match against Kurt Angle. And then Benoit would go on to win his match against both Shawn Michaels and Triple H in a three-way fight, which in all my years of watching UFC, I have never witnessed a three-way fight.
Well, I don't... That's the script. That's where the scripted part comes in. Yeah, you have, I'll tell you, UFC, you want to up your viewership.
I love the UFC. I love
what if they had a three-way match, right?
Can you imagine?
Or tag team UFC? You getting a little tired? Or if you could save your opponent?
God, it'd be a lot of deaths if there was a three-way fight in UFC. So Chris would leave with the championship belt.
Mm-hmm.
It was the event that was said to be the highlight of Chris's career. And he was in the ring accepting the belt, and Eddie joined him on stage, and the two friends shared a joyful embrace.
One of the most emotional, one of the most beautiful, heartbreaking, touching things I, as a wrestling fan, have ever witnessed. And I'm using all of this, and I'm aware of the hindsight.
Yes.
But at the time, because wrestling champions are Hulk Hogan, they're big guys. So
right, and Chris was only 5'11".
For two little guys to win both championships at WrestleMania was pretty special at the time.
And it was like Eddie's comeback, too. Like,
it was, yep.
And David, which is Chris's son from his first marriage, said that he wished more than anything that Eddie and his dad would have retired after this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On November 12th of 2005, Eddie, Chris, and Eddie's nephew, Chavo, were headed to Minneapolis for a show. Well, on the plane, Chavo said that he noticed that Eddie kept nodding off to sleep. The next morning, November 13th, 2005, Chavo said that he received a call from the front desk informing him that they were concerned for his uncle. They had been asked to give him a wake-up call at 5:30 a.m. and he was not picking up the phone or answering his door. Chavo went into his uncle's room to try to make contact with him. Security told him that the chain lock was on the door, so it means that somebody was inside the room. Security cut the lock, and Chavo rushed to find Eddie face down in the bathroom with his toothbrush in his hand.
Jeez.
Chavo raced to his uncle, who is still alive, but barely. He began trying to save his uncle. He said he knew when his uncle was no longer alive, and he had died in his arms.
Wow, I didn't know that Chavo found him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he had his toothbrush in his hand, so I imagine, it's hard to say. He wouldn't pick up the call at 5:30 in the morning, so I imagine it was like a going to bed brushing your teeth. Kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then the phone was ringing and it was Chris wanting to know where everyone was. Chavo asked him if he was sitting down and Chris said he was. And Chavo broke the news to him and he said, Chris let out the most guttural sounding wail.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, when I hear the sound, a guttural wail, listening to as much crime as I do, it's usually a phrase you hear in reference to a mother losing a child. And that, to me, is probably the worst pain anyone could ever feel. Mm-hmm. So for Chris to let out that kind of a sound, you had to know how much he cared for this person. Eddie's death was ruled heart disease. Many thought that he had relapsed, but it was a heart disease, and he was only 38 years old.
Wow.
I'm 38 years old. Heart disease.
You better quit being a professional wrestler.
I can't.
It's in your blood.
The tribute that the WWE put on for Eddie was, I even found it amazing, to be honest. Chris was inconsolable. They always said that Chris lacked a lot of emotion. He was very stoic. But he choked out this message about how much he loved Eddie. He would talk about after their matches or before the gym, how they would just sit in the car and talk to each other about everything, about things in their lives that were happening, about problems that they had. And then he said he would see Eddie again. But he was the definition of devastated. A fellow wrestler and friend, Chris Jericho, said that Chris hugged him and sobbed on his shoulder. And when he pulled away, Jericho said that his shirt was soaked through with Benoit's tears.
Wow. I get, also when you hold it in for so long.
Right.
Once you open that tap.
Yeah, for sure. After the funeral, though, Chris became very introverted, but he didn't take any time off for himself. He went right back to work. Nancy's response to the tragedy was to take care of Vicky and the children. She tried to hold it together for everyone, but one day she had to give Vicky some tough love. Mm-hmm. And she said, Vicky was in bed and Nancy came in and said, you've got to stop this. You need to get up. You have two girls who need you. Chris would come over to visit with his wife and Eddie's family. And he was an absolute mess. He used to hug Eddie's pillow. He used to lie on Eddie's side of the bed and hug his pillow and just cry. Wow. And Eddie's kids used to go to Vicky and say, Mom, Chris is crying again. Like, he had a weight room and everything, and Chris would just break down at the weight room, and he was just a mess. Chris was becoming withdrawn and even paranoid. The death of his friend had deeply affected him, and he was a shell of himself. But at work, he was business as usual, and he had one hell of a poker face. As a form of therapy, Nancy got him a journal so that he could write to Eddie and have some sort of release. In one entry, Chris wrote, I'll be with you soon.
Oof.
Clearly, Chris was not doing well. As good of a poker face as he had, his role at the WWE was fading. He wasn't one of the taller guys. He only stood at 5'11", and the real tall guys right now were the big stars. Also, the WWE wanted Chris's storyline to be that he was feuding with Vicky and Chavo Guerra. And he was suffering so badly from the loss of his friends that even being scripted was painful for him.
Yeah, that's not cool.
Really kind of dirty.
Yeah, they do that. They think, like, the best storylines are the ones that blur.
Oh my God, right? Like, the man, he's a mess, and you're going to write that into a storyline? That's cruel.
Well, they also said that Eddie Guerrero was in hell, not heaven.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, I think it was Randy Orton, don't quote me, but yeah, maybe Edge, but yeah, somebody used
his name. I don't think a real life death should be.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like McMahon's limo exploding. Okay, let's talk about his death.
Sure.
He's just chilling.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seemed like they were gearing up to write in the end of Chris's career with the WWE. Now let's jump ahead to June 23rd of 2007. Chris was supposed to be attending a show in Laredo, Texas. Once in Texas, Chavo, Chris, and Scott Armstrong, which I'm sure you know, but Scott Armstrong is a wrestling producer and referee.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to drive together. Chavo said once he landed, he got a call from Chris, and Chris told Chavo that he did not think he was going to make the event, which is super unlike Chris.
Mm-hmm.
When he was asked why, Chris said that Nancy and Daniel both had food poisoning and they were actually vomiting blood, and he just wanted to take care of them. Naturally, Chavo wished them all well and carried on to the event. He did say that one thing that felt a little off was that at the end of the phone call, Chris stopped and said, Chavo, I love you. Chavo found that a bit off, but the next day they were all supposed to meet in Houston for a pay-per-view event, and there was no way that Chris would miss that. These were important events that were all planned out way in advance, and Chris was nothing if not professional. Mm-hmm. He was also scripted in to win a championship there.
Right.
At 5:30 a.m. on June 24th, Chavo received a text from Chris's phone, and it read, the dogs are in the enclosed pool area and the back door is open. And 30 seconds later, he received that exact same message, but from Nancy's phone. And then again, another 30 seconds pass, and he gets a message saying, 130 Green Meadow Lane, Fayette, Georgia, 30215, which was Benoit's address.
Oh, Jesus.
At this point, Chavo was half asleep and he's expecting he's going to see Chris soon. So he ignores these messages and goes back to sleep. Later on at breakfast, Chavo talks to Scott Armstrong and asks if he got a weird text from Chris, which he did. He received verbatim the exact same text message that Chavo did at 5:30. By 2 p.m. on Sunday, after everyone discussing the bizarre messages and Chris now being a no-show, not only once, but quickly approaching the second time, Vince McMahon decided that we needed to get eyes on Chris. Johnny Nitro would replace Chris in his match against CM Punk, and he would win the championship because of this. But anyways, Dennis Fagan, who runs security for the WWE, called 911 and gave Chris's information to have a welfare check then. After the welfare check was called in, there was some complications in getting the officers inside because of the two German shepherds. They were in the front yard and they were very territorial. But thankfully, the Benoits were very friendly with their neighbor, Holly, and she knew the dogs well. She was able to get them into the home and tried locking them away when she came out screaming, Daniel is dead, Daniel is dead.
Oh, Jesus.
Larry Alden, he was the lieutenant in charge, said after Holly came running out claiming to have seen Daniel dead, they entered the home only to be met with the unmistakable smell of death. Daniel was on his bed face down and had clearly been dead for some time. They found Nancy wrapped in a rug on the ground with her hands and feet bound. In the basement gym was where they located Chris. He had used the cables from a weightlifting machine and had put them around his neck and then allowed the weight to fall, essentially hanging himself. All three bodies had a Bible placed at their sides. So 26 hours after the WWE paid tribute to the Benoit family, they were now faced with the facts of the tragedy.
Yeah.
We will never know if this was brought on by a fight between Nancy and Chris or if Chris was under the influence. There were a bunch of empty alcohol containers laying around, or if this was just premeditated and he just did it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a trigger warning for anyone who doesn't want to hear this. Please skip ahead by 30 seconds to a minute. I'm just going to explain how the authorities believe this all played out.
Okay.
It's assumed on Friday evening, Chris had bound Nancy and knelt on her back and choked her with a telephone cord. The following morning, Saturday, Chris somehow was able to get Daniel to consume Xanax. And then when the boy was sedated, his father smothered him. If there's any relief in this at all, it was that Daniel didn't have any defense injuries. So it was likely that he was asleep.
He was asleep when it happened.
I hope to God he was asleep. Sunday morning, Chris would presumably wake up and then do a Google search on a verse in the Bible that had to do with the resurrection of a young boy. Chris then went to his home gym and hung himself using the cable on his weight machine. He set the weight at 240 pounds and released the weight quickly.
So in his, this was over a weekend, they think?
3 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nancy went on Friday, Daniel on Saturday, and then Chris took his own life on Sunday. But they said that he looked up, it was like the prophet Elijah, and it had to do with the resurrection of a baby boy. And mm-hmm. I was like, so it sounds like he regretted it after he did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. To me, that's kind of eerie.
Or with the Bibles, I don't know. You don't want to speculate. Maybe one, you know, see sure. you.
Yeah.
See you soon. Or I don't know.
But now, because the WWE hadn't waited to find out the facts behind the deaths, there would be some serious backpedaling to do. And the media was out for blood.
Well, everybody just talked about what a great guy this murderer was.
Yeah.
Was.
Vince McMahon made a statement and basically just said, aside from this acknowledgement, we will be erasing Chris Benoit from the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Chris would have a very quiet private funeral. His son, David, said that they only invited a few people. But there was not a lot of people from the WWE community that would have gone had they been invited.
Mm-hmm.
When asked if anyone from the WWE reached out to him, Chris's son David said Chris Jericho and Chavo Guerrero were the only ones to reach out. He said, aside from that, they acted as if he didn't exist.
Wow.
And I mean, not even to give him condolences on his baby brother.
It just seems, you know, wrestling is, you know, there's a lot of women in it now, but I mean, it's a brotherhood. It's a boys club. It's, you know, camaraderie, and just to say that they wouldn't
even acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And like David, you know, he's been part, he was a young man at the time, but he's been part of it for essentially his entire life.
Sure.
For them not to say anything.
Yeah.
The media went crazy about claims about roid rage. And that was what caused Chris to do what he had done. It was alleged that Chris had been taking steroids since he was in high school. Messages from Nancy to Chris were leaked, and she would write, "Get off the crap you're on. It's making you passive aggressive, and I don't need the abuse." And another one said, "We both know the wellness program is a joke."
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the wellness program is?
I do, yeah.
Okay, so it was actually brought on after Eddie Guerrero died.
Mm-hmm.
The wellness program that Nancy was referring to is a program that was put into place after the death of Eddie Guerrero, and it was intended to help the talent stay healthy. It was administered independently by world-renowned medical professionals, and it included cardiovascular testing, impact testing for brain function, substance abuse, drug testing, annual physicals, and medical referrals for current issues. This was put into place after several wrestlers had untimely deaths and had been found with prescription drugs and performance-enhancing drugs in their system.
There is, and maybe you're going to go into it, but there is a thing that they have where if you've worked for the WWE ever in mm-hmm. your life, and you have substance issues, they will pay for you to go to rehab, no matter how long you worked for them, no matter how long ago it was.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a lot of onus on the addict as well.
Right. Oh, yeah. Another thing that should not be discounted is chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Of course.
Encephalopathy. Okay. It's called CTE. And I think roid rage was solely blamed in 2007. With Benoit, because I don't think CTE was as highly recognized as it is now.
No, it wasn't.
It used to just simply be called punch drunk syndrome. And I think it became more known to the public after NFL player Aaron Hernandez, who seemingly had no impulse control and a violent temper. Before appealing, he had been convicted in the murder of his fiance's sister's boyfriend, and it is suspected that he gunned down two other people after a night partying. Aaron later completed suicide in jail while the appeal was still underway. And during his autopsy, it was discovered that Aaron had stage 3 CTE at the age of 27. Before Aaron, this stage of CTE had not been seen in anyone under the age of 46.
Wow.
Aaron's brain had shrunken, withered areas and significant damage to the frontal lobe, which impacts a person's ability to make decisions and moderate behavior.
I can't believe football is legal.
Well, you know what?
I really can't.
I'm going to get into it in here somewhere, but wrestling stars, 20 times more likely to have bad CTE than a football player.
Oh, yeah. Well, and also there was a stat, I don't even know what it is anymore, but it was the how much more likely a professional wrestler is to die prematurely than a professional athlete.
I will get into that.
All right. Sorry, I'm getting ahead.
No, well, you're in the know. That's why. That's right. you usually can't have these back and forth with the murder stuff. You're like,
that's right.
As for Chris, the sport legacy institutions, don't know why that was so hard to read, opinion was that Chris was suffering such bad brain damage. Dr. Robert Cantu would compare Chris's brain to that of an 80-year-old man with severe dementia.
Wow.
According to ESPN, Chris's brain had liquefied by the time they found his body, and that was only one day after his death.
Liquefied?
Yeah. Science Daily reported that there had also been abnormal proteins in Benoit's brain that have been confirmed to cause neurodegeneration, cognitive impairment, and dementia. As I was researching this case, I thought it would be interesting to list a few of the other pro wrestlers who died at young ages and what they actually died from. I was floored.
How many there are?
By the pages and pages and pages that popped up. Drug overdoses, heart failures, heart disease was almost the cause of all of them.
Well, and I always thought, like, my understanding of, you know, heart failure for a wrestler was always because some of them, well, you maybe get into it again, but it was Rohypnol, like GHB. They would take the date rape drug. It's a muscle relaxer.
Oh, really?
So they'd be on steroids. So you can lift more weight, pump more weight than you normally could, but you'd still have these muscles that are so hard in your body. You take a muscle relaxer to sleep and they would misdo the dose or whatever it is, but a lot of drugs. Anyways,
yes, sorry. For sure. I could not believe the amount. So I just picked a handful that I'll just rattle off. The first guy was the guy who left the WCW, whose spot in Kevin Sullivan feud Chris would fill was Brian William Pillman. He was 35 years old and died of heart failure and drugs. Mm-hmm. The woman who was responsible for cleaning out the stables for the Four Horsemen, Miss Elizabeth, who was 42. She was also Macho Man Randy Savage's ex-wife, and at the time of her death was dating Lex Luger. Mm-hmm. That's like a Lex Luthor play on, right?
Yeah. It is.
Her death was full cardiac arrest. Before her death, she was drinking vodka and taking prescription medication.
Mm-hmm.
British Bulldog Davey Boy was 39 when he died from a heart attack. Eddie Guerrero was 38 when he died of heart failure. Crash Holly, which is Michael John Lockwood, was 32 when he is asphyxiated on his own vomit after overdosing on painkillers.
Crash Holly died? I missed that one.
And one last one was Lance Cade, who was 29 and died from taking various drugs. Also, what should be noted is that according to a CTE study, professional wrestlers are 20 times more likely to die of CTE-related death than professional football players. Now, I'm just going to quickly touch on the William Regal statement. So he said that his light went on to go in for his interview. And as he was walking into the studio to give his statement about Chris Benoit, he said that JBL.
Yeah.
You know who that is?
Justin Bradshaw, Lakefield.
So he was coming out of the bathroom and he just had like a really puzzled look on his face. And so William Regal was like, what's up? Mm-hmm. He's like, I just really hope he had nothing to do with it.
Oh, wow.
And so that was like the very last phrase that he went into his interview thinking about.
Yeah.
So he didn't know anything, but then that thought was in his head when he went in there.
What if? Yeah.
Yeah. And there you have it. This is such a tragic story, especially being that a 7-year-old boy lost his life.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, that's the most devastating part. But I did learn a lot about wrestling, even though it is all scripted. I'm sorry if you know that.
Wait. What do you mean scripted?
But the risks that these athletes are taking are not. I hope I spoke wrestling enough, well enough to make you understand.
Yeah, you're all right. What you lacked in wrestling, you've made up for in murder and mayhem. So.
I think I've seen enough. I did actually find myself lurking around the more salacious scenes, but, you know, I more than I should have for the research, but I'm good now. I got it out of my system. So there you have it. That was Chris Benoit, the murders of Daniel and Nancy Benoit.
Wow. Just what a tragedy.
What a tragedy.
And, you know, and I know that there's a ton of work that they're doing on CTE and stuff like that, but it's just getting hit in the head.
And like his flying headbutts. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That's wild to me. I don't know. You know, like I said at the beginning, you really want to hate him, but if your brain is mud, like who, I mean.
Yeah, I know. It's weird because you think you look at the person, you're like, hey, you, Chris Benoit, you are a murderer.
Yeah.
But then it's like, is he in control of his actions? Right. But then does that give him a pass?
You see when him and Nancy first got together and like he was defending her honor when he was so pissed off that he heard that Kevin Sullivan had hurt her.
Mm-hmm.
And like he went to her therapy meet. Like, I mean, I don't want to say he's a great guy. He's obviously not a great guy, but I got to wonder how much.
Yeah.
This, like, if he never had a head injury in his life, would any of this stuff happen?
I can say no.
Yeah. I would feel no too.
Obviously. I mean, I can, as a non-doctor like yourself,
What? We're both sitting here with a doctor's license. What are we doing? Why is anyone listening to this?
Do you think, let me ask you this as a non-wrestling fan, because this is kind of brought up in my circles, but do you think he should be wiped off all footage and references?
You know, his accomplishments are still real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because of those accomplishments, it put him in a position where his brain wasn't functioning properly. So for them to just completely wipe him out and not talk to his kid or anything like that, I just think that that's very irresponsible. I think that you could take this as a learning opportunity and say like, okay, you know, but that to me, it seems like they're very unwilling to take any responsibility for anything.
Yeah. And that's what it almost looks like at the, you know, at first I was like, you know what? That's a classy move. You got to do that. And then years later, I'm starting to think, are they just trying to distance themselves from this?
That's exactly what they're doing.
Because I thought they were, protecting the victims and they don't want to re-trigger anybody. But
Vince McMahon said that this was not a roid rage because it happened over 3 days. So when everybody was saying it's roid rage because he's in the WWE, mm-hmm. and he said, well, that's not our fault because it's not a rage. A rage takes fat, But that was before CTE came into play. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, you know, when you harvest this environment as the land of giants and a little guy coming in and you're like, if only you were bigger, you'd be the most successful. Is that not kind of encouraging them to take steroids, which leads to these high intense matches, which leads to you hitting your head, which leads to CTE?
It's also, it's worth mentioning too, that Vince McMahon did go to court in the 90s for allegedly giving out roids, steroids to his people. He was acquitted,
mm-hmm.
but there was something there.
Yeah, it was so bad Hulk Hogan even testified. You know it's bad when Hulk Hogan has to testify? He wears his formal bandana.
Yeah.
I swear, it's a black bandana for court.
He just comes in and rips off his shirt. Okay, well, that is a sad one, but...
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, maybe we'll do a nicer one next time.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.